the spring of 2011, my mom called and explained that she had only a few months to live and that she wanted me to come home to be with her. Now, a couple of years previously, my Jesuit superiors had expressed a lot of confidence in me when they sent me to Germany to do a master's degree in philosophy. At the same time that my mother was dying, I was racing to finish that degree to fulfill my obligations as a Jesuit. That was quite a bit of pressure. I talked with my formation director about the stress I was under, and he basically said this: "Your mission as a Jesuit is not to get a master's degree in philosophy. Your mission is to be a minister of God's reconciling love. So get your butt home and be with your family at this difficult time." Now, once home, I treated my time with my mom and family as part of my Jesuit mission. I was using all of those pastoral skills I had been learning, asking the big questions, situating everything in the context of the spiritual exercises. At one point, I asked my mom a very Jesuit question: "What's it like to be dying?" Without thinking, she blurted out, "It sucks." That was her polite way of telling me, "Knock it off with all your Jesuit crap." She wanted a son beside her, not a Jesuit. Instead of getting discouraged, I just let myself relax and enjoyed my last few weeks with my mom. And that's when the miracle started unexpectedly unfolding right before my eyes. Old and forgotten memories took on new life in our conversations. Deep wounds in our relationship began to heal quite naturally with tender and affectionate gestures. I expected my last weeks with my mom to be grueling and heart-wrenchingly mournful. To my utter astonishment, they were among the happiest and most meaningful weeks of my life. Unbeknownst to her, my mom taught me an important lesson. Sometimes we have to get out of our own way so that we can appreciate what God is doing in our lives, what God is doing for us. This was perhaps the first time that I realized that all my talents, all my hard work, and all my love are nothing, nothing in comparison to God's power at work in my life and the depths of God's love for me. This is the lesson that Jesus is trying to teach his disciples in today's gospel. He sends them out on mission and instructs them not to take any money or extra clothing, not to worry about where they're going to stay or what they're going to eat. Jesus was asking his disciples to be materially poor, actually poor, as well as somewhat unprepared while they were on mission. Why? Because Jesus wanted his disciples and those they encountered to realize that all the wealth in the world, combined with the most brilliant minds and the most meticulous planning, add absolutely nothing to God's power at work in the world. The message these disciples went off carrying speaks for itself. In our everyday lives, at work, in politics, and even in the church, when we encounter a problem, our tendency is to throw as much money, talent, and research into the solution as we can possibly muster. Our assumption is that with enough ingenuity and financial resources, we can do anything. In instructing his disciples to forsake material resources and proper planning, Jesus is telling them that the kingdom of God is not built with wealth and talent. Actually, we don't build God's kingdom at all. God builds God's kingdom. From a human perspective, this tactic doesn't make any sense. No money, no talent, no planning. That's a recipe for failure. But let's look at the facts. Jesus and his first disciples were poor, had little, if any, formal education, were socially irrelevant, and were simply nobodies from the world's perspective. The miracle is that with scant financial resources and little human capital, within a generation, Christianity had spread all over the known world, like wildfire. My impression is that the situation is a bit more complicated today, especially when money, education, and talent are more or less a given in every situation in which we find ourselves. At some point, the church was no longer able to adhere to Jesus' strict instructions to his disciples regarding poverty and the like. And I don't mean to criticize the institutionalization and professionalization of our church. These developments came with indisputable advantages. But it does complicate our ability to distinguish when God is actually at work and when we are just using our resources well. Not that these two options have to be mutually exclusive. But the point is that the experience of God surpasses what we can possibly do for ourselves. Can we point to moments in our lives where we felt tremendous gratitude in God's presence, even though we weren't really using our talents and other resources? Moments where we didn't plan anything out, and where the experience happened quite unexpectedly. It's important for me, as it may be for you too, to recognize that God's action in my life and in the world does not entirely depend on me or even on us. I need to realize that God's power is so vast that I cannot possibly harness or control it. I need to realize that God's love for me is so incredibly tender that it boggles my imagination and is beyond my capacity to summon at will. I need to know that I can't make this stuff about God up. All I can do is stand back and marvel at God's surpassing greatness, as well as at God's proximity. And Jesus wanted his disciples and other followers to know that what God offers is not the invention of human beings. What God offers to us is more marvelous by far.